as you could see. You take your pleasure, whatever that may be. Did you ever just try to see a small town lies, make rumors fly? So stick together, I think you're gonna try to live forever, to never die. It all alone, so raise your glass, you wrecked another home. Your chance went past, now your story's told.
You're about to hear something change over the next half an hour, because it's kind of a well-known fact that when I get amongst other Geordie accents, mine tends to come back, even though I've been out of the Northeast a long time. Paul Rose, welcome to the programme. You also left the Northeast some time ago, didn't you, I guess?
I left the Northeast, I think, when I was about 19.
Right.
But I moved back up there a while ago. It's, as we were saying before we started, it's a changed city and it's easy to get in and out of.
Yes. The Northeast engenders pride in being a Geordie, but often many of us have left over the course of the years.
Yeah.
That's not a track from your new album, that, though, is it? The one you just played for us there.
No, that's from that's an acoustic version of a song called Change, which is on the Half Alive album.
Mm.
The new album, Double Life, has four fantastic American singers.
Yeah.
And for me to sing those songs is intimidating, to say the least. So when I'm out doing this show, this kind of show, I stick to what I've already got.
Which is kind of odd in a way, because so obviously we're going to be talking about your new album, because that's kind of why you're here as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because of the way the album has come together and who's on it, it's very difficult for you to actually recreate that in the studio here, isn't it, in a way?
It is, and it's, you know, we didn't set out to make that rod for our own back, but we sort of did a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we've just done a 14-day UK tour where we had the whole American band over, and it went really well, and the music was fantastic, and you know I felt really honoured and privileged to have the calibre of and the experience and the stories.
Yeah.
In the band was, you know, that was quite literally never a dull moment.
But also, the tracks on the album, they're nearly all covers, nearly all blues originals. So how did the idea come about to actually do an album with these kind of luminaries and these kind of famous names, and also to actually go back to your blues roots, in a sense? Which came first?
Well, we were shooting a video in Glasgow, a specific project to shoot some high-definition video for YouTube. And at the end of the session, we knocked out a slow blues. We knocked out a 12-bar blues. Mm. And people saw it and went, Paul, you should make a blues album. You should make an album which is solely devoted to that kind of music. And so that was the beginning of the idea. Now, the guy who was managing me was at that time acquainted with John Wooler, who produced Still Got the Blues for Gary Moore.
Yeah.
And we sent him some stuff and he came back and said, I'll do it. I'll produce this album. And he said, but if you'll have to do it in Los Angeles, which was a bad break for us, of course. Yes. We didn't want to go over to all that sunshine. But what he said was, because there's a host of artists there that I can call up and who just have to literally jump in the car and come down and do the session, which is what happened. And what we didn't have a fortune and we didn't have a lot of time. So the way that we did it was, as we approached the singers and said, what's your strongest song? What song can you come into the studio and sing in a first or second take? Mm-hmm. And they said, this one. So we learnt those songs in the UK. And we flew over there and we got into the rehearsal studio and we ran through the songs with these guys. And we just, so that's how those songs came about. Rather than give them new songs that they hadn't heard, that had just been written, that hadn't been recorded, we went down a tried and tested road. And the album, from us meeting in the rehearsal studio on day one to leaving on day 15, was rehearsed, recorded and mixed in that 15-day period. So it was all second takes. First take was a run through, second take was a take, if not it was a third take at the most. Mm. And then on to the next song, you know.
And each artist came in, did their number, then disappeared basically.
Terry Evans came in, who, you know, he's been with Rykooda 35 years. Yeah. I mean, it was a spiritual experience in the presence of a man who can sing like that, and the history, and the, you know, he's been singing since he was 8 in church in the Mississippi is where he started, and he's now 73. And I mean, when he sings, it's beyond belief. You don't hear, you know, with the very, very best of respect, you don't hear a voice like that in Newcastle.
No.
You know, and incredible, you know.
I'm going to answer this if you don't want to, but was anybody who you asked who actually said no?
No, everybody said yes. There was one person that we asked who we just couldn't get. I won't go down that road. It was because we couldn't afford him.
Right, yeah. Mm. And in terms of having asked somebody like Terry and saying, will you come along and do something on the album? Yeah. And what's the number you'd like to do?
Yeah.
Were there any people who, when they came back and gave you the number, you thought, oh, no, I don't want to do that one?
No, not really.
No.
Not really. I mean, the Stormy Monday is the last track on the album. Mm. And it has to be, there's a story attached to that, which is important to tell, really, because I know that song's been done 100 million times, you know. But during... The guy who builds my guitars in Los Angeles is a friend, Lance Lerman, and he has a documentary team who are wanting to make a film about the guitar factory that he's got. And he said to these guys, there's a British guitar player going to be in town. You should take the cameras down to the studio and film them while they're working. So we knew this was going to happen, and we said, well, we're going to need something to play in the studio when the cameras are there. And Sweet Pea said, well, I can sing Stormy Monday. So that's what we did.
Right.
That was all it was. And then we listened back to it and we went, whoa, it's going on the album.
Right.
You know.
Let's talk more about the album and your career. What are you going to do for us next?
This next one is a song that I wrote it's about the life that I used to live, possibly when I was living down in London when I was in my early 20s. And it's called Easy Life. Just looking for the good times. I spend all of my money, and I only found a sad time. Thank you.
If you give me an inch, I'm gonna take a mile, and I'll step on your toes if I can get what's mine. I'd bury my head in the sand, but the thought of throwing my life away. Ten long years wasted going out to play. If you give me an inch, I'm gonna take a mile. I'll step on your toes if I can get what's mine. Ten long years just a wasted going out to play. I bury my head in the sand, but the thought of throwing my life away. Give me an inch, I'm gonna take a mile, and I'll step on your toes if I can get what's mine.
That's lovely. Taken what, from 2 or 3 years ago? Is that the album from that?
Yeah, yeah. That's taken from the Learning Curve CD, an acoustic CD that I did a few years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, I've done 12 albums now.
I know, so. Yes. Over about a 12-year period, slightly longer, isn't it?
15, about 15 years.
15 years, yeah.
Yeah.
I left the Northeast as you were 10.
Right.
And so by the time you grew up and we started playing, it had already changed and I had gone. But it was always, to me, the Northeast was always the home of some really gritty music, which was why so many of the bands coming out of there sort of were the early days of the R&B.
Mm.
When you were growing up, was it the same, roughly, for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate, I think, in a lot of ways, that I started playing in pubs in Newcastle when I was about 15. And I was hanging around with a couple of guys up there, one of which was Johnny Whitehill, a blues guitar player who worked with Paul Lamb, the harmonica player, and they sort of took me under their wing, kind of thing. I was 16, and I got an opportunity to go out and play around the country. They started to get me, and they encouraged me to get out of Newcastle, and I did. You know, and I ended up living just across the road.
I know, small world. Yes, and even smaller. Paul Lamb's going to be in here in about 2 weeks' time.
Is he really? Yes, yes. Right, tell him I said hello.
Yeah,
I mean, I would have to say that Paul Lamb's probably one of my biggest inspirations. You know, because he's a painting decorator from Blyth, who happens to be one of the best harmonica players on the planet. And to see him flourish down here, I used to see him with the first band that they came down with was called the Blues Burglars. And I saw him blow the roof off places, and I thought, you can do it.
Yes,
if he can do it, you can. It can be done. It's taken me longer to get my act together, but that was where I started in Newcastle. And like I say, I was fortunate enough to jump in the van, come down. We're going to London. Come and stay. You know, sleep on a floor or whatever. You know,
well, so much easier then.
Oh. You got enough brown ale inside you.
And I also, again, I was saying to a friend recently, in those days, before the motorways were built, and with cars that were less reliable and didn't go as fast, the journey time to London was less than it is now.
Yeah, right.
And the reason for that was less traffic.
Yeah.
And when you got to the outskirts of London, like Golders Green, you were still in London within another 10 minutes, kind of quarter of an hour stuff. Yeah. And so now it's like 5 hours to Newcastle, and in those days it was four.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yes, I mean, we used to come down most weekends and things and see the music that was going on here. But over the decades and over the albums, your music style has changed perceptibly, hasn't it? Sort of.
Well, yeah. My heart is in 70s rock guitar players like Ritchie Blackmore and Robin Truer and guys like that. But they introduced me through the interviews that. So hearing them play. And reading the interviews that they said that they would give, they would be naming names like B.B. King and Albert King. And then I found Johnny Winter through the old Grey Whistle test. And then I'd read Johnny Winter interviews and he'd talk about, you know, Dr. John. And so the 70s rock guys, not so much the guys who are the big guitar names of today, who are more metal, you know, the 70s rock guys had real strong roots in the blues.
Yes, that's true.
And the Peter Greens of this world and the Roy Buchanans. So I was, you know, I was sort of seduced by technique for quite a long time, and I became disillusioned with it. An American, the big guitar players were putting out these albums, and they were getting faster and more complicated and more technical, and I lost interest in it, and I thought, I don't know where the guitar can go from this. And somebody introduced me to a guy called Danny Gatton. He brought an album back from the States of Danny Gatton, and it was blues, country, jazz, swing, and it blew me head off completely. And then I rediscovered Ritchie Blackmore. I rediscovered Deep Purple Made in Japan. And it was suddenly like, hang on a second. That's why you started to play the guitar.
Yes.
So that's the story. And I've made albums through that transition.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the one thing also, if you're listening at home and wondering who's the second guitarist on this, there isn't a second guitarist. You're using a Boss Loop, aren't you?
It's the band that doesn't talk back.
Doesn't charge very much money either, yes.
One ticket and he's in.
But I mean, some of the bands, you see the pedal board, it comes in a flight case and they take the lid off and there's about like a dozen pedals in there, you know? And it has got very, very technical, hasn't it, some of the electric guitar playing?
It has, you know, and when I'm playing live, I don't use pedals. I just use a good Strat, good Telecaster, and a good valve amp with preferably a lot of gain on the front of it. And that's because I think that's what Hendrix sounded like. That's what Ritchie Blackmore sounded like. That's what Robin Truer sounded like.
Driving a valve amp hard, you mean?
Absolutely, with a single coil pickup and a Stratocaster. Yeah. And I mean, you see pictures of Hendrix playing at the Woodstock Festival and they go, oh, Hendrix used effects. Well, I mean, compared to today, and a lot of the time you listen to Hendrix, I can tell you for sure that I know that there's no effects on there. He might step on the distortion pedal for part of the solo, but he won't use it for all of the solo. Because there's a very, very, a great amplifier builder said to me, you spend £2,000 on a guitar, you spend £2,000 on an amp, and then you spend £80 on a digital box to put in the middle.
Yes, which distorts it.
Which kills it.
Yes.
You know, and I've always stuck to that. I've always stuck to that. You know, Roy Buchanan and Danny Gatton, the pure sound of the guitar.
Let's go back to the album, which has been released, what, about a month now, isn't it, or thereabouts? Or
it came out in April 19th, I think. Right. 20th March, can't remember.
And but, of course, touring with that means that it is going to be very difficult to tour with simply because of the kind of music that's on it compared with what you normally do.
Yeah.
So how are you approaching it? What are you doing on your sort of live sets?
Well, I mean, I've when I'm not touring with the American guys, I play with a trio and I play a lot of my own material and I do a few cover versions, but I do them. I have my own take on these cover versions, you know. I mean, we do House of the Rising Sun, you know, but we do like it's a tongue in cheek version of House of the Rising Sun played as Hank Marvin might have played it.
Yes.
And it's a joke, but I'll tell you, it goes down great. We have great, it's about having fun, you know, and entertaining people and, you know, playing tunes that people can relate to and understand. I've been to the trade shows in America and heard guys flying up and down the neck and they're great, you know, but I like to hear a tune, you know.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm giving a presentation. I'm going back on stage again for the first time after 30 years of giving up DJ in Bushy Blues Festival in October.
Right.
And I'm doing a 1-hour presentation, interactive, I've been told this week, on the history of the blues and how it affected us here in the UK.
Right.
Which is going to be an odd one to put together in a sense because I'm not going to be a stage DJ. I'm actually going to be sitting and talking as we are now,
right. But
to an audience in front of me. And it's knowing, but again, it's going to be for me, I think for all of us, we were originally drawn towards the blues because of the shivers down the spine and the goosebumps and not because of the dexterity and the skill or even the volume.
That's right.
Yeah. And, So the album is obviously a marker in time, but for your next one, after this, you're going to go back to the usual sort of Paul way of putting an album together, or has this sparked you off on a new direction?
I hope we can do more with that lineup. I certainly do, but I actually finished an album the day before we went to Los Angeles. I literally finished mixing the last track of another album, which is called White Mountain Road, which is going to come out later this year or maybe next year, and we got Randy Brecker playing trumpet on that, and Bill Evans playing tenor sax, and Ted McKenna from Rory's band playing drums, and that's a nice album, and that's ready to go, you know. But I know
you've got quite an address book, quite a black book of addresses, haven't you? Really, people you can call on.
I've got Bottle to ring them up more than anything else. That's the worst they can say is no. You know?
Right. Hello, my name is Paul Rose. You don't know who I am, but I'd like you to be on my album.
Yeah, yeah. And they say yes usually.
Right. That's amazing. Yeah, when the album arrived, and I sort of was looking through the tracks on the album, and I thought, oh, that's nice. I haven't heard that for a while, because, as I say, it's covers. But things like Gamelin Hope's Drowning in a Sea of Love, and If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right, they're far more on the soul side of the spectrum, aren't they?
Yeah. It was John Wooler heard me play the guitar, and he said, we can make a guitar album, and it'll be one of all of the other guitar albums out there. And he said, but what's going to set this apart is the vocals.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to bring in vocalists to set it apart. And then basically you just have to put a solo against those vocalists. You know, so when we said, Sweet Pea, what song do you want to sing? And he said, you know, Let's Straighten It Out's a strong number for me. Or Terry said, Dark End of the Street's a great number for me. He said, okay, great. And we get the song together and then we put a solo on, which gives me a chance to get some, you know, some airtime.
Yeah,
and it's worked well. It has its drawbacks because the project happened in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But the album's certainly having we're getting 5-star reviews more or less across the board. A guy called it a shred album in Germany, a reviewer.
A shred album.
Aye.
And
I don't know.
It's Germans. They're a very strange breed of Germans.
Yeah. It's not a shred album.
No, it's not. But it's odd because it actually doesn't say Paul Rose and Chums, does it?
No.
I mean, you pick it up and you think it's Paul, it's his new album, and then it's only when you start playing it do you realise that, in fact, your role in it is less than it normally is.
Do you know what? It was the easiest album I've ever made in my life, you know, because, for instance, the one that I just mentioned before, I engineered it, I produced it, I wrote it, I mixed it, I sang it, I played it, and I had to direct the musicians on it as well.
All right, don't worry. We get planes. It's Heathrow.
Yeah. And to have these people who were so able and so experienced and so confident Randy Jacobs playing the rhythm guitar, for instance, not only is he the best rhythm guitar player I've ever heard, his, as a musical director in the rehearsals and in the studio, say, hang on, we just steer this way, and he would throw in some gems of just how to make the project shine that little bit more, you know. It was an incredible experience. I hope to repeat it. I sincerely hope to repeat it. And we've talked about it, but, you know, we'll see.
Were there any tracks that didn't make the cut? Are there some stuff left on the cutting room floor equivalent kind of stuff?
There is Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City didn't make the album.
Right.
We just couldn't quite... We would have got it right, but we just didn't have the time. Flights.
Who were the vocals on that?
Sweet Pea.
Right.
Flights were booked. We had to go home. Mm-hmm. We had to finish the album. We didn't want to come back to London with an album that we needed to go back and fix a bass or this. It's just like, we're going to have to park that one. And with Stormy Monday coming out the way that it did.
Yeah, that kind of finished the album off.
It filled the gap.
Okay, musically, what are you doing for us now?
This next one is it's an instrumental one that I wrote, and it's called Home, which is about anywhere where you happen to live. But it's like a Celtic Northumbrian folk tune, but it's a blues guitar piece at the same time. So please bear with me. Don't go on my description of how it sounds. Thank you.
It's lovely, and also it reminded you're so right. It is sort of Northumberland, and you can almost hear the Northumbrian pipes in there as well. You know,
the album version has pipes and fiddle and stuff like that, all following the melody of the guitar.
Right, Northumbrian pipes or real pipes? You know, no, I should say real pipes. I mean, it's all Scottish pipes.
Pipes. I can't remember. I've just got them played. But can you play the pipes?
Yeah. So you're touring. You finished a tour, quite a long tour, through April and May, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then what's plans for the summer?
Well, currently we're putting more dates together for the UK. We're starting in Scotland. I'm doing some solo acoustic stuff. I'm doing some trio stuff. The dates are being put together now. They'll be on the website, paulrose.co.uk, as soon as they're confirmed, as and when they're
that
confirmed.
That was wonderfully done. Because I normally end up, I talk about websites, but you dropped it in there beautifully. And
It's watching BBC Breakfast.
Yeah.
I shouldn't maybe say BBC. And we're working on some Benelux gigs, some German gigs, and then hopefully we're going to put it all together in a big package and take it and see if America wants to have a look.
Yeah.
So it's all part of a rolling strategy. It's great fun. It's a privilege.
And with the new album, because of the diversity of things on it, has it kind of opened your eyes to other areas, other directions? Or?
Completely.
Yeah.
Certainly with Randy Jacobs. I mean, Randy's played rhythm guitar for Bonnie Raitt. He's played rhythm guitar for B.B. King, Kris Kristofferson, Bob Dylan, Elton John. He's done some stuff. And he's been to Eddie Van Halen's house.
Right.
survived. And survived, yeah. And he was talking about a studio in Los Angeles and, you know, me going over there just by myself and bringing in some musicians there and jamming and putting some stuff down and potentially an album.
Seeing what happens.
Forming there.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. Because, I mean, we would be jamming in sound checks and it would be like, what's that? Oh, anything. You know, it's like Sweet Pea and Randy have got vocal things that they jam on just for sound checks that aren't songs. And I'm standing there saying, we should turn that.
What's that?
Yes,
yeah.
You know, and I can remember them. Mm. I remember them, so I'm gonna try and jam them down the throat.
Yes, I mean there are so many ways now which you can. I mean, going back a decade or so, you know, but literally it was the album, the CD, and that was the only way of doing things. Mm. But now there are so many ways of getting music out if you want to, and even monetizing it, and not quite the way it used to be, but in a very different way of monetizing it, and there are lots of ways of getting people to hear some music you would never otherwise hear. You know. And,
YouTube for me has been incredible, you know. Certainly, all my albums are available on iTunes and they're on the website, and you know. But absolutely, you know, YouTube especially has been great.
I mean, it's the scariest thing is actually that there are kids, mostly kids, growing up now, teenagers, 13, 14, 15, who have never listened or don't listen to radio at all.
Yeah,
their total music life is Spotify and YouTube.
I know.
Yeah,
I know, and it's. There's not as much money to be made out of it. If there is not as much money to be made out of it as there once was, but there's certainly a chance to be heard. It's much easier to be heard.
There is, but also you're right about not being so much money around. But at the same time, there are less sharks in the water taking the money off you before you get it, so you end up with your 10% of what you actually earned.
It's cleaner. Yeah,
it is much cleaner. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are bands now who actually manage themselves, do all the marketing, do everything. You know, and every penny that comes in stays there, which is good. Really
that's
good.
That's been my experience. You know, running doing my own thing, my own albums, my own gigs, my own website, my own YouTube bits. Keeps you busy.
It does. And of course, the monetization does come when eventually people do come and see you playing and wander down the front at the end of the gig and buy the stuff to hear.
Totally. Especially Germany. Germany's great.
Yeah.
They don't realise just how great and they say that the German music scene isn't as healthy as it was. It's still 100 times healthier than some places I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing reports this week of some really fine UK bands who are really going places. I won't mention their names because it'd be unfair, but they've been playing to audiences of 10 and 15. That's not good at all, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's you gotta love it. You gotta have, you know, if you are in it for anything other than the vision and the creative force that you've been born with, you know, if I didn't have that, I would have quit years ago. No doubt about it.
I blame Simon Cowell for everything.
Absolutely Simon Cowell, you know, but there was Phil Spector before him, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
Taking artists and just sticking something on them and saying, here, this is you, and then them disappearing, you know. But Simon Cowell...
I think not that many.
Yeah.
We normally during the sessions, it's four tracks, and only on a couple of occasions have I actually said, okay, well, we won't do four tracks here in the studio, but we will this time because the new album is just so different, and you can't recreate it here because you haven't got those voices.
Sure.
So we'll close with a track from the album, and what of all the diverse tracks that are on it do you think kind of sums up best for a person listening to this now for the first time, not having heard the new album at all? What's going to give them the best overview of your new album?
I would say Sweet Pea, Sing and Straighten It Out.
That's what we'll do. Mm-hmm. Paul Rose, thank you so much for your time on The Raven of the Blues.
Thank you very much
Sweet
for the
Sweet Pea and Straighten It Out it is.
Thanks very much, Dave.
Don't you leave me.